Everyone's here, so we'll get underway. We've got quite a lot to get through today, but I'd just like to extend a warm welcome to everyone, particularly our two submitters in the public forum. We've got Lynn Hill and Mary McFarlane. Also welcome to our friends from Port Otago, Mr. Faulkner, Mr. Plunkett, Paul Ray, and also Kevin Winders. A particularly warm welcome to Kevin because he's the CEO designate down there. So welcome along to this meeting, Kevin. And also welcome to the staff. Just to go through the formalities, we've got no apologies. I haven't been advised of any additional items for the agenda, although there is one in committee concerning the by-election. Conflicts of interest, I haven't been advised of any. No. We'll deal with the minutes now. The minutes have been circulated with the agenda. Are there any matters arising from those minutes people wish to raise at this stage?
I'm happy to move them as true and accurate.
Thank you. Seeing the council name, all those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carry. Okay, we're on to the public forum. First up, we have Lynn Hill, who's talking about the Mosgiel bus service. So we're in your hands, Lynn. Welcome.
When I visited the bus hub display at the Civic Centre before Christmas, I asked why this display was not being taken to the Mosgiel Service Centre. The answer was that they were more interested in feedback from bus users in the Octagon. Later inquiry directed to the ORC Transport Office revealed that the Mosgiel Service would abandon the Centre City stop closest to the hospital. Effectively, this downgrades the Mosgiel bus service. The population is growing fast, especially in the older age group, so a good bus service is essential. The one-way taxi fare from Mosgiel to Dunedin is over $60, and mobility vouchers are not available to all, especially for transitory health problems. Driving incurs difficulty finding parking. No driver, whatever their age, can be 100% sure they will be able to drive tomorrow. Heart attack, stroke, epilepsy, visual impairment, concussion, accident, medication can all remove the ability to drive. I have been asked by someone who was in hospital while the petition relevant to this was circulating, to share their story with you. They spent some weeks in a secure unit, but once they were deemed well enough, they were allowed to use the bus service because it was so close to do a day release to their Mosgiel home. That would not have been possible had it required two bus services each way. The suggestion that there will be another bus at the hub ignores people. It is painful and difficult for people on crutches, using sticks or in plaster to get on and off buses, no matter if the bus kneels. It is painful for them to pull themselves to their feet, and they certainly cannot do it quickly. It is not a short walk for them to walk to the hospital. The bus hub also prolongs the time people need to be away from home. At present, it is practical for those with an hospital appointment on the hour to catch a bus which leaves Mosgiel 55 minutes earlier. It will not be so with the bus hub. The service may run every 15 minutes. It will still take 30 minutes from Mosgiel to get to the hub. Then time needs to be allowed to get off their bus, make their way, perhaps very slowly, to board another bus. To be sure of keeping appointments, we'll need at least another 10 minutes to change buses, more if the bus is not linked to the Mosgiel timetable. I doubt if the hospital bus driver will want to wait 5 minutes beyond timetable for Mosgiel passengers. And I have travelled the Mosgiel Dunedin service to know, often enough, to know that it can arrive up to 5 minutes late. Right now, Mosgiel passengers have no guarantee that there will be a designated hospital bus in operation from the moment the bus hub becomes operational. Nor do we have a firm commitment to the frequency of the service or if it will run over the weekend at shorter times to enable hospital visiting. We do not know which stop at the hub the hospital bus will be parked or where the hospital bus stop will be. Given that the Mosgiel passengers were not regarded as important during the original displays, we respectfully request that the centre city stop be retained while the hospital remains on its present site. And I would like to present a petition of 186 signatures gathered from Mosgiel people that supports this request.
Sorry, I'm stuck behind the desk. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, and we'll give due consideration to that. The next part of the procedure is councillors may have questions or clarifications, so that's the next part. Councillor Scott.
How much further do you think I have to walk if I hop off at the bus hub as opposed to the new centre, to the hospital? How much further do you think you have to walk?
Around the bus hub area?
Yeah.
Okay, we do a bit of measuring with a cycle wheel during the weekend, and the distance along the hub is about 500 metres. Now that, we only measured it the length of the St Andrew Street. We didn't go round into either Great King, or we only measured the length of Great King Street, sorry. We did not go around the corner to St Andrew Street or into Moray Place, even though the bus hub says that there will be buses parked there.
So, through the chair, it's about 1 3/4 blocks, yeah? And how far is it from Centre City New World to the hospital?
Centre City New World is 400 metres.
So 400, what was the first number?
500.
So there's a change of 100 metres. Is that what you're saying?
It is what I'm saying, and if you have met the number of people I've met on crutches, it makes every 50 metres.
But all these people on crutches can walk 400 metres.
They may be able to at the moment,
but they can't walk 500.
Most of them are deteriorating, and that will get less and less possible.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Everyone happy? Well, thank you very much, Lynn, for that. I'm pleased you've taken the time to come and talk to us about this, and our staff and councillors will give consideration to this, and some of them will get back to you at some stage. So thank you again.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present this.
Next we have Mary McFarlane. Welcome, Mary, again. Mary's from the Port Chalmers community and wants to talk about issues the community has down there with Port Otago, I understand.
Yes, it's also helpful to note that I have a constructive and continuing dialogue with Port Otago, mostly centred around the word better. And I've lived in Port Chalmers since 1998, and I'm part of a loose group of people from both sides of the harbour. And what I'm really wanting to talk about is just the big picture, actually. But I think that here we are in 2017, we're in a situation that's different to when the regional council was formed, and there's lots of addresses that seem to be escalating. While the Otago hinterland benefits from the unfettered access to Port Otago Limited, the cost to the people living beside the harbour is enormous. As any regional councillor, CEO, staff member, Port Otago CEO, director has given serious thought to the economic and lifestyle impact of Port Otago operations on the residents of Otago Harbour. After 25 plus years existence, the Otago Regional Council has not been in this position before. We've heard how shipping activities are eroding Te Rauone Beach, bigger and bigger ships as the decades pass, speed limits not being adhered to. Residents of Kerry's Bay and Back Beach, Port Chalmers, orally and visually undermined by Port Otago reclamations, growth of industry into an existing residential area. Port Chalmers Village, where I used to have a business on Main Street in Port Chalmers, is zoned a heritage precinct area. It's being shaken apart by heavily laden trucks every 70 seconds. And I understand the Port Otago Limited will not support a 30k speed limit. This enables conversation on the Main Street, more safety crossing the street, but also the vibrations caused by laden trucks aren't so bad when they're going slowly. Also, they need a specifically designed road. I know this is out of your jurisdiction, but Port Otago owns Icon Logistics, so they also have an interest in trucking. Since the demise of the Otago Harbour Board, the quality of life of the inhabitants surrounding Otago Harbour and the harbour itself as a living entity has been progressively eroded by Port Otago's commercial for-profit mandate. Reclamations have brought noise into areas known for their peaceful outlook. That's a quote from Port Otago. Side channels to communities on the peninsula silted up. For example, the Glenfell Wharf is now useless except for wedding photos. Stone groins are also disintegrating, and that's of course beyond Port Otago's mandate, but that all used to happen. I met one of your number at an East Coast Marine Forum last year and attempted to discuss the environmental impact of Port Otago on harbour residents. His eyes glazed over, and I got a whiff of something that I thought, is this a conflict of interest here? Regional Council receives millions from Port Otago, very well done, but does it blur your vision? Where is the incentive to censure or wield any power you have as 100% shareholders to instruct Port Otago Limited to be active, responsible, ethical neighbours as stated in the Port Environment Plan? I find it odd that the Regional Council was charged with protecting our environment when your company asset is destroying it in some respects. The prevalent Port Otago attitude is we're complying, for example, by hosting the Port Noise Liaison Environment Committee, which is different to meaningful action. So we're asking that Port Otago Limited, I believe that some councillors work on a statement of corporate intent, but this could be tailored so Port Otago Limited's actions are accountable. Also, re-quality of life in the harbour, and Port Otago is providing a service, and the greater good needs to be part of that. I think there's more to this than millions. We ask that the Otago Regional Council instruct Port Otago to establish a fund to be devoted to mitigating environmental degradation attributable to Port Otago activities. If this had been done when Port Otago was set up, there'd be a healthy, you know, obviously presuming it's been properly managed, a really good resource to deal with all the current issues that the people around the harbour are facing. And of course I wasn't there when it was set up, so I don't even know whether it was considered, but certainly a mitigation fund would be a positive way of dealing with these issues. And just as an aside, the board members received a letter from me in 2005 and so did Jeff about architecture and the quality of architecture and rebuilds. My background's in the visual arts, art history, architectural research. And I look at Port Otago and I heard they were building a terminal that's now fait accompli. The redevelopment of their office building isn't. You've got fantastic vantage points from Observation Point, Flagstaff Hill, Lady Thorndale, look down onto Port Otago. And there we have Fred von Brandenburg, who I've never met, who does fantastic work. And there's something to be said for spending a bit more money on very high quality design that attracts people. Port Chalmers could do with that. You get some stunning buildings, people go to look at the buildings, look at what's happening in New Plymouth. My husband and I travelled to Bilbao to look at the Guggenheim. That's amongst old buildings. And here we have this architect on our doorstep who's world class. I don't know him, I've never met him, but I just worry that that your mandate, directors and CEO, if it's just about money, you get tilt slab concrete. You know, it's just a matter of, I think, upping the visual aesthetics, people's visual literacy, and I think that that's an aside from all the other issues I've just talked about, which but means quite a lot to me, that as well as down here in the harbour, we could be having some absolutely stunning architecture that people come to Dunedin in the area to look at. And it lifts everybody, not just the cruise ship passengers, the people, us that can't be in, you know, if there's a good building, but you know, you just look at something, you don't need to be in it, and that's where quite a big consideration. There's quite a lot more about other things, but that's that.
Okay, well, thank you for that. You've been very clear on what you said. Thank you. Councillors, do you have any queries, questions? Councillor Deegar.
Well done, Mary. I agree with pretty much everything you said. The mitigation fund, if it existed, give us two or three examples of what it could be expended on in the next 12 months.
Te Rauono Beach is probably a biggie. Also, the sound contours, like where I live, I am woken up by the port operations at Boiler Point, and our trusty Port Otago people know all about that. I don't want to repeat it, but it's going to get worse with the pile-driven wharf extending to the very end of Boiler Point. You know, Port Otago grew to meet us in Kerry's Bay, and now the noise contours need to be revised. The reality is, I get woken up by Port Otago operations at Boiler Point. After the straddle crane fell over, they went very quiet for quite a long time, and it's kind of ramping up again. So it's mostly, you know, very good operators, and they're not so good operators. And but I also think the noise contours need to be revised, because people above me at Reynoldstown get woken up by port operations. So it's different to what it was, and there also needs to be a generosity of sort of intend to try to get to the end of this. I mean, I'm in a fully insulated house, but apparently you need to insulate under the roof, immediately under the roof. I didn't know that when we did it. So, yeah. Two things would be good.
Yep, thank you.
Councillor Laws.
I don't know where these public submissions go, so apologies, I've just been here for 4 months. So good on you. I'm really interested, though, in your coming as an individual. But so the first question I have is, do you what level of community support do you think you have for the concerns that you raise?
I'm a member of the Kerry's Bay Association, and I went over to Portobello when they had the Te Rauone meeting, not the formal group, the other looser group, and we all talked about that then, and I pretty much gave a similar talk there, didn't have met any of those people, so I went over to meet them, and said to Jan McLean that I was talking here, and she said that I can say I'm part of their loose group. And at that meeting, that was where I suggested the idea of the mitigation fund, and they made a formal resolution at that meeting that that should be conveyed to the council, though that was their meeting, it wasn't ours.
And secondly, against the noise, and I have some sympathy with you, don't get me wrong, but my understanding is that the district council, sorry, the city council has the responsibility for noise and monitoring noise requirements. It's not so much a regional council.
Oh, I know, because of the conflict of interest, the regional council had to hand it over to the DCC, but nothing ever really happens.
Okay. And the third thing is just a suggestion. You ever thought of taking a tort of private nuisance against them?
No. In fact, you see, what's really interesting is, and I said to Lynn Anderson, the barrister at the 2GP meeting, it's like I'm paying them to make a case against me. You know, because I'm a ratepayer. You know, I own Port Otago. Our public meeting is effectively the public meeting the Port Noise and Environment Liaison Committee has. So it's just all like, it's tedious.
But you might just, you know, find a helpful barrister somewhere and private nuisance.
Private nuisance.
So if you've warned them, the tort is that if you've warned them and they keep on doing something and it can be shown to affect your quality of life and the quality of life of fellow residents, then you have a potential legal action against them. It's called a tort of private nuisance.
I do know that the one good reality I've had, and Porirega know about it, is having, as a consequence of noise, wearing earplugs and then having a smoke alarm go off and not hearing it. And that is a major safety issue for me, and that's what really gets me going. And that's probably quite good, you all know that. And if you were watching documentary on TV about 3 weeks ago, they talked about how people can sleep through, mostly children, through smoke alarms. So, you know, something happens to me, and it's been a particularly noisy night for Otago, it is unsafe. So that could be another reason for private nuisance.
Private nuisance. The residents of nearby Wellington Airport took it against Wellington Airport and had some success in at least restricting or getting mitigation effects.
I believe that also a port town near Tauranga or a small town on the way to the port of Tauranga, they managed to get the state highway to decrease the speed limit to 30k. So it's possible.
Okay, we've got other councillors wishing to ask Councillor Noon.
Thanks, Mary. A query about the statement of intent, and essentially that's probably our main avenue of influence.
Yes.
So are you basically saying that document may be better from a community point of view if it had more emphasis on sort of social community well-being rather than maybe a focus on economic return? Is that...
Well, I don't see why it can't. I've never written one. I've read quite a lot of them. But this is the whole problem, isn't it? That when dollars are the bottom line, other things suffer. Mostly community interest. And I don't see why it can't all be working. Because in the letter I wrote to the directors, you know, I acknowledge the good job that they do running Port Otago. However, we can do better. And I think that... So many years have gone on now, the boats are bigger, the trucks are bigger, they're heavier. When I lived on the main street, the really heavy trucks used to go through in the middle of the night, and I'd wake up and my building would be doing that. So, you know. So, yes, do try and, I don't know if you're working on that, but surely that's one thing you can do, is tailor the statement of corporate intent just to be a bit more positive for us.
Councillor Woodhead.
Mary, do you attend the port liaison meetings? I know you're going to attend the one that's coming up. I think there's one tonight.
I'm going to the one tonight. I used to attend them, but I don't find them very productive, and I actually have had a couple of comments from board members that I find have found objectionable, which they know about, and I don't actually enjoy them.
But you're going tonight?
I am.
Good. Thank you.
Councillor Neil.
Mary, you made reference to the straddle falling over.
Yes.
And then it being quieter after that. And I'm just trying to pick up, are you saying that the operators could operate the gear more quietly than they sometimes do, or that they even vary between operators?
I've been told it's about educating the operators. I mean, that was a terrible accident, but everybody noticed that everybody went a bit slower after that, so then it was quieter.
That's what I wanted to clarify. So you were saying because it was slower, it was quiet. Okay.
Councillor Scott.
The comment that in regard to acoustics that nothing ever happens, are you insinuating that the port... I mean, has the port spent money on acoustics in your area?
Within the existing noise contours.
And your insulation, was that...
I'm about half a block above the noise contour, so I'm not in it at all, and neither are the people. You know, Border Point's here, and then it goes right up to Reynolds Town. Yeah.
Right.
So the contours are very low down.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Hogg.
George here. Mary, have you noticed when you have the cruise ships in, and there's lots of buses, is the noise different, or do you find that the trucks are more slower because they're, you know, there's those pickup points? Do you notice, for example, just there's a whole different hub going on, but it's perhaps a little bit more slowed down because
where I live, I don't know. Sometimes you can hear the cruise ships, but on the main street, it's mayhem when the cruise ships are in. I've seen cruise ship passengers, this lady was talking about people on crutches and yes. all of that. There's a lot of cruise ship passengers that use various mobility aids, and you're rendered speechless by people crossing at that main intersection at the bottom, that they won't really follow the crossing. They'll look the other way because they're from a different country, so they'll
right.
step out looking left.
Yes.
And down by, opposite Port Otago there, there's just that where the fish and chip shop is.
Yes.
I've seen people crossing there across to the town hall, and it just beggars belief. It's it would be a tragedy if somebody yes. got badly injured, and it probably is only a matter of time, and that's... I don't think you can attribute that to anybody's fault. It's just that there's so many people and so many vehicles and all different modes of transport. It's extraordinary.
If it just slowed down a lot more, those trucks, slowing it would
down
be much...
would be
right.
very, very good.
Right.
Yeah. It gives everybody a chance.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I think we're sort of running over time a bit. Thank you very much, Mary. I think this has probably been a bit of a refresher for us all about some of the issues, and we need to have some discussions amongst ourselves and probably with the port as well. So at some stage, someone will get back to you. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, the next part is the presentation for the 6 month report from Port Otago. So welcome up to the front, gentlemen. Right, is everyone ready? I'll hand over to Mr. Faulkner to give the 6 month report.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and just reiterate my welcome to Kevin Winders, who is the Chief Executive Advisor, and Paul Ray, who's my Deputy Chairman to Port Otago. He's happy to be in town today, so they've also come along. Yeah, good to give the interim report again, up till 31st of December 2016. Just to get an overview, health and safety, we're continuing to strive. We've probably bounced a little bit, we'll see on the next slide, just in terms of where we are in achievement. But it's still very, very much a top priority for the Port Otago. Cargo volumes are up a bit in the first half, and I'll comment a bit further just why that is. And our profitability is up 12%. This is the group as a whole, so it includes our land side as well as the port cargo operations. And channel deepening, that's continuing. Again, I'll give a few more details on that. We're still heading towards our 40 metres and to achieve that by the end of this year. So just looking at our health and safety, total recordable injury frequency rate is the sort of one that's measured around most businesses. You can see that has bounced a bit since August 16, where we were down our lowest. And certainly when you get to the levels we've achieved, it's one incident that does cause that bounce quite considerably. Getting below 10 is probably a lot of businesses are still striving to get to there. Ideally, we obviously want to be zero, but getting below 10 is a good achievement. So that's 10 incidents per million working hours, and we're still continuing on that quest to improve that and get those lines still heading down towards the ultimate zero. So just the financial results. As you can see, revenue is up. Our EBITDA is also up. And operating profit, etc. So that has been financially a good improvement for the first 6 months of 2016. Financial position, very stable, assets up slightly, equity up slightly, and equity ratio up slightly. So pretty static in terms of those financial measures. Going on to the dividend, we approved a $3.5 million dividend, and that was paid, I believe, mid-February. and our forecast dividend is 7.5. We sort of fully expect to be paying that full dividend for the full year. So just breaking these down into the Port Otago trading results, again, it's quite good to see the improvement there. And it's a little bit even better than that, because last year we did include $1 million worth, or roughly $1 million worth of dredging income from Lyttelton. And this year we've only done a small part of that, because the dredge did break down when it was up in Lyttelton. So we still have another $800,000, which we have since done since the end of the financial year, but that will be reported in our second half year. So the result that we see there is we're very pleased with the results that we have been achieved. And you know, it's good to report that. Just moving on to the trade, container volumes, they're slightly up. And there's a higher transship volume. And there's a bit of a saga around that. This is partly due to Rokaikoura earthquake. So all of a sudden, centre port's not available. Obviously, the rail thing coming down is cut. So with movement of containers around, that has meant that there's been a few containers that have changed ships in Port Chalmers to go somewhere else, and they may have previously been done that at Wellington or somewhere else. So just those sorts of things have led to that increase in containers. Full container exports pretty similar, and huge increase in conventional cargo. That's up 24%. But a big chunk of that is logs. And again, there was sort of the logs of 38% up, 48,000 tonnes. And the expectation is it would be another record for us, something around 960,000 for the year, which a few years back we did 182,000 tonnes. So quite a significant change there. And for those of you who recently have just been past the yacht log yard opposite the stadium there, it's pretty full at the moment. There's a ship in there loading today. And you know, it is good to have a lot of these logs are going out through the upper harbour, not all going out through Port Chalmers. Vessel arrivals, yep, that's also up a bit, and so that's good. Cruise vessels, we did talk about on the 22nd of December we were going to have two very large ones in, Ovation of the Seas. That was cancelled due to wind, not here, but elsewhere on the coast, and so it has arrived, and we've had two visits since. So that Ovation of the Seas, you can the blue one there, 348 metres long, 5,000 odd passengers, 1,800 crew, so it is a floating city, and when that's in at the same time as a 3,500 vessel, probably like what's shown there, I think as Mary said, it's a bit of bedlam in Port Chalmers, as well as elsewhere in Dunedin. But that has been worthwhile. Cruise vessels, we have had a higher cancellations this year due to weather. We've had 7 to date, and on Friday we were looking forward to the Queen Victoria coming in, but that was cancelled due to fog. So these sort of things are beyond our control, but it's certainly, I know it lets a lot of people down because they're all primed up to do things, but unfortunately the weather gods don't play their part every time. So we've got 81 cruise vessels are forecast for this season, and last year 70. 92 are booked for next year, and that includes 7 visits by Ovation of the Seas. So as well as the bigger number of vessels, the size is continuing to rise. So the number of passengers that are coming through the port is increasing considerably. Staff, still 309 permanent staff, and yeah, we're a little bit different to other ports in that we do have probably far more permanent staff than others, and you know, that does help our health and safety and our, you know, attitude to work, etc. And yeah, it just makes it a bit easier to drive that health and safety message that we're heading for. Just port developments, when you were down having a look, you saw the extension to A-Shed, and we were spending there again today with another cruise vessel on there. That's still working very well, and I think it's a big improvement on marquees and whatever else we used as we have in the past. So that's been going well. And new generation, as we've talked about, still heading to achieve 14 metres by December 2017. Our dredge has been up in Littleton. It actually did two trips because it had a maintenance issue, had to come back to get fixed up, then went back up to Littleton, but it's now back and on, fully on with the channel deepening. Last year we did sort of night shifts, but this time we've now been working with 7 days a week and 13 hours a day. So we've got two crews that have split over that, and you know, it's fair to say that's probably working better, because generally it's this time of the year, it's during daylight hours. The other part of that is the 140 metre wharf extension at Port Chalmers there. That tenders have been evaluated at the moment, and we expect to let that in the next couple of months, and that'll be finished by December next year. Now, the trading results for our property arm, Chalmers Properties, that's been pretty consistent with the previous year. A little bit of a difference is that the income shown for rental did include $400,000 make good for a property in Auckland, and we've had the income in the first 6 months. The costs of doing that update and as a tenant's changed will be coming through in the second 6 months, so it'll come back to bite us a little bit. But included in that result was a payment of $400,000 to cancel the contract we had with Andrew, or sale and purchase contract we had with Andrew Duncan, which was set up in 2008. So that completes that contract now and gets it completely off the books. Chalmers Properties, it's pleasing that we have got the 100% occupancy rate for our Auckland and Dunedin investment portfolios. And the weighted average lease tenure, that's been increasing. And, at 10.3 years, it's an improvement over the 9.1. So that just gives you a feel for what our forward lease commitments are. And that's a pretty good position, and a much improved position to be in than we've been in previous years. On the drive round with the council, we did show you Seal and Tube. We've just been passed out again today. That's fully occupied and working, and again, it's a big improvement to that area down there. Moving up to Tarapa, that's continuing to develop, and perhaps we just go to the next slide, Jeff. Just to sort of put it in context, we've done two stages now. So we've developed two stages, which is a total of 23.2 hectares. Of that, we've sold 9.7 hectares. That leaves 13.5 hectares. And it's easier to talk in hectares because often these sections get extended due to demand from the people. And we have a further 22 hectares to go. So that's that development in the whole. And the other thing is that we're expecting a few of those settlements to come through in the first half of the financial year. But because of delays in getting titles and a few other bits and pieces, we've got $7 million worth of settlements due in the second half of the year, and they'll be in the books before the end of June. So that development is proceeding as quickly as we expect. And I think in the previous meetings I've raised that we're looking at, or we are underway with, say, some developments of unit warehouses. There's six of those. That's well underway, and as I said previously, these are for either lease or for sale, and there's good interest already in the in looking at those. As well as that, we're also looking at doing a bigger warehouse, and again, that's on the basis of it being for lease or for sale, and we're quite happy with either approach really at this stage. So then, just going on to as we look ahead. The higher cargo volumes and the additional cruise vessels is going to give us a full year result that probably will be better than budgeted, and we're very pleased about that. There is Chalmers Properties that are going to continue. Their incomes are pretty set with all the rentals, etc. That will be pretty much right. And then, as I've alluded to, the Hamilton land sales, which are going to come in before balance date, will just complete the picture. And Mr. Chairman, that's what I'm going to report to half year for this stage.
Thank you very much. It seems the trend is pretty much as in the past. It's very consistent. Questions from councillors?
Councillor Scott.
Look, just once again, just like to acknowledge, you know, the hard work that David and the success that Jeff and the team have had this year. And, you know, the financials is obviously some pleasing results. I suspect, you know, we heard in the public forum that, you know, with that there's some tensions, and I suspect some of the tensions are due to the successes of the port, and it is a port town. The fact that you're getting more cruise ships, you're getting more going across the wharf, you want larger wharfs, more trucks going down the main street, all these types of things. So in a way, I suspect that, you know, it's sort of part and parcel of the success that the port has had. And to be fair, the council has enjoyed that partnership. But any comment in terms of that community custodianship in terms of where to from here for the future? You don't have to go into any detail. I thought the 30k limit on down through the main street probably wasn't a bad idea without this really impacting on the bottom line too much.
Well, perhaps just on the 30k, we don't actually, that's an easy TA decision and a DCC decision. It's up to them to change speed limits. Unfortunately, we have no control over speed limits.
No, you obviously don't have the control, but you are a key stakeholder, and I'm sure there's a process that one can go through to implement positive change if necessary. But say, you know, like, if you, I mean, do you think it is a good idea? And I do apologise, you know, am I being rude? I put you on the spot, but if you want to comment, it's up to you.
No, I'll cover it off. There's been a lot of monitoring done. First of all, state highway, so it's driven by state highway policy on a way. Okay, so that's NZTA in sole jurisdiction. They've done a lot of monitoring, and NZTA's conclusion is that as a rule, trucks are doing just over 30k's anyway. So the NZTA concluded that a further speed restriction wasn't quite related to their monitoring 2 years back.
Wow.
Yeah. And so what they've done is they've put in some safety measures like the dividers in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
And actually wider markings on the side of the road actually slow people down. That's what they told me. So they've put in safe traffic calming measures that they think support a 30k speed restriction without actually having a designated 30k speed restriction because they won't approve it otherwise.
Yeah, and I thank you. I'm on to a bit of a win here. Well, in terms of questions and answers, what about the acoustic question? Because obviously the port has over the years sunk millions of dollars in terms of acoustic work, and they had a liaison committee, and you know, so let's acknowledge that. Thank you, well done. With more traffic going across the wharf and so forth, what's the future look like for acoustic management and responsibility?
We're going to hear a bit more about it tonight, aren't we?
Yes, well, it's a very detailed noise mitigation and noise management plan in the district plan,
yeah,
which covers the mitigation sort of requirements. And the noise contours are reviewed and updated on a 2-yearly sort of basis, so that they remain sort of current. So it's a very complex subject. We have Keith Ballard doing a presentation tonight on what noise is and how it sort of behaves for members of the community, and Keith Ballard himself and Marshall Dave have been working with the port for over 20 years, so they have a good understanding of our environment. And of course the 2GP itself is up for review currently.
Yes.
Okay, Councillor Noon.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr Chairman. My question was just around Chalmers property and particularly the land that they own within the city. I'm just thinking long term, is the long term strategy from Chalmers Property is to continue with that ownership ground lease going forward? And I ask the question more around the ability, I suppose,
encourage reinvestment? And I suppose the answer is you've got an example where there's reinvestment occurring. So is the policy going to change going forward, or you know, stick with your knitting?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty good to be doing those, seeing those developments happen down there. It is sometimes difficult to free up the land where an owner has an asset on it, and we can't push them off to do it. So the opportunity for those two, there's a new piece of land we've purchased where steel and tube are going, and then on the other one was a piece of land that came available, which we basically were able to offer to CHEP. And you might notice in front of that there's still a vacant piece of land there. So as the opportunity comes up for leases to be basically handed back, bought out, whatever you like to call it, yes, we take that opportunity. We also take the opportunity in some areas where leaseholders want to actually buy it out themselves. And we've got two of those on our books right at the moment. So we just see that continuing on.
And my other question through the chair is around the statement of intent, and I suppose it's based on some of the issues that were raised today by the submitter. And I'll ask the question as politically correct as possible, but in your view as chairman of the board, you're comfortable that the port is delivering to the community in the widest possible way in terms of economic, social, cultural, environmental outcomes? And I'm asking that simply because looking at the broader view, I understand that it's a business model we've got here, but in those other aspects, because there's a number of strings to your bow and how you deal with those wider issues.
Under my view, we're acting responsibly. I think there are a lot of councillors that have been there at Tyrone Beach. We've spent a lot of money already in Tyrone Beach, and we've committed to spend a lot more. And that's well underway. And there's other areas too where we've spent a lot of money, and we'll continue to do so.
Through the chair, the question is more around, as the port has grown, is it your view that your responsibilities to the wider community has grown with it?
I don't necessarily see that they are actually inextricably linked. We have obligations to meet, and I believe that we do meet those, and more often than not go further than we probably need to.
Thank you. Okay, Councillor Woodyan.
quite significant growth in logs. It's been occurring over the last couple of years. And so two questions. First one is just a reminder for us, please, of the percentage of the freight, incoming freight, that arrives on rail. And secondly, from a log capacity perspective, you know, great upgrades here in the centre city, is there a capacity you've got, or is it just a matter of more frequent ship visits?
Well, the first part of the answer is that we're in excess of 60% of our freight coming in comes in by rail, which is very, very high by all other ports in New Zealand. And the question about Dunedin is, are you talking about whether we can put more through Dunedin?
Oh, logs in general across both Dunedin and the whole port operation.
We're probably getting up towards a pretty big thing. We've only got a limited area of storage, and if the vessels sort of came a bit less frequent, we would be really struggling. Because certainly the ones that come to the upper harbour, they can only fill up half full because of the draft constraints.
Yep.
But Jeff, you got anything else to add to that?
Oh, I think at Port Jarvis are pretty much at capacity, so that's any growth in logs. The only time where that grows is the ships come more frequently, and I don't see that sort of occurring. But I think we're in a sort of sustainable cut of profile at the moment, so I don't see a lot of growth from where we are. It's probably the same.
Thank you.
Councillor Digger.
Yeah, David and Jeff, thank you very much for this and for your presentation, and congratulations on what you've achieved. Your presentation, though, reminded me of what our submitter Mary McFarlane was talking about in terms of the relationship between Port Otago and the architectural community. Because when I looked at steel and tube, I thought, oof, That's an architect-free zone, if ever I saw one. It's just four slabs of concrete banged together with a roof on. In Hamilton, it looked as though Chalmers Property had got architectural advice, which is great, but why not here? And with your passenger terminal, which I agree works well from what I could see when we visited, but boy, it's ugly. Just a steel and tubers. How come you don't get in Dunedin a bit of architectural counselling before you bung up a new building?
All right, well, steel and tubers, it is in a heavy industrial area. It is very much an industrial
building. So is Emerson's.
You know, it's, again, it comes back to what the client will pay for. While we build it, it's built very much to the specifications of steel and tube, of what they want. Down at the A-shed, I think we have pointed out at the time, it actually doubles up. When all the cruise ships go away, there's actually a timber handling facility. So, it does need that practical use of it. I think there has been approved to go on there. The Port Liaison Committee have come up with a mural to go on there. And the community have basically decided what they want on that. I think that's agreed all, isn't it? So that again is a little part to soften that, those probably harsher lines of a warehouse.
Thank you. Councillor Laws.
First of all, hello, how are you?
I'm
new here, so. And I've been doing some comparisons of the Port of Otago with other ports that are owned throughout New Zealand. I have a fair bit of experience with the Port of Napier. I'm intrigued. They have half the asset base of you but provide a bigger dividend. Why is that? And they've been doing that consistently. And the next question is sort of related to that, is that you have an asset base of about $500 million. You've got equity of about $420 million, and yet the dividend as a proportion of that seems quite small by comparison. Is that because you've been investing in, well, becoming the largest of all the ports in New Zealand, I think? Yes, you have the largest property portfolio. Is that the reason why the dividends have been so low historically?
Yeah, well, I think you, which I know a little bit about Napier, I was the director of a holding company for a period. They have got a huge capital program in front of them, and you probably also know that they're deciding whether they're going to fund that through selling or extra rates. But we are basically coming to the end of a capital reinvestment through a new generation. So we've spent our capital over the past few years, which obviously has come out of their earnings. We are quite different with our land and our properties, and the historic history of all that. It's well known to other councils, you're probably not aware, is that, you know, that came with us from Otago Harbour Port. What was decided at the time, that we would sell half of that and reinvest that outside Dunedin area to diversify the income stream. That investment has been pretty successful, and it's probably grown twice at least. So the capital gain that you see has come out through that property valuation. So it is a big chunk and far bigger than any other port. We acknowledge that.
So are you expecting now? Have you consolidated? You're not expanding any further because you expect to see an increase in that dividend return now?
Well, that's something that we can look at in SCI, which is coming up.
Because you. From an external perspective, if you were looking at this as a private company, you'd say on your asset base, wouldn't you, that your dividend or your return to shareholders is disproportionately low?
Well, again, I go back to the last few years, we've spent a lot of development costs in the Harbour Basin there. And, you know, with the Wharf really as the last ones of that, one of that, we'll be looking at it.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions? Well, if not, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
We had a visit to the port in the last few weeks for that as well, so thank you for that. And we look forward to the full year result. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I can.
Okay, we'll move on through the agenda. The next paper is the 1718 Draft Annual Plan and Consultation Document. Just to summarise this, obviously we've been through three main workshops. I'm hearing from staff, hearing from councillors' ideas, and I think we've reached a reasonable consensus that this is our annual plan and the changes we've made in our expenditure and the areas we're going to operate in. Also, the paper does outline the differences between this annual plan and their long-term plan. It's sort of a mandatory requirement to do that. Then you go through the main items in that, those changes, and obviously emergency management is probably the big one. And then it lists a whole lot of others through there, probably another 11. Then it goes on to other matters, such as pest management review, wild and pine, very important issues, head office replacement, and then gives some financial implications, and on to targeted rates, general rates, implications for what we've decided in there. And finally, it does mention about balancing the budget, the fact we're not going to do that to cover operating costs, but we do that by funding out of reserves. And then it goes to talk about the consultation we're going to undertake with this plan. And then finally, the recommendations. Just with the recommendations, I think they're fairly straightforward. Just the last one, the hearing subcommittee be appointed. I had discussions with Steve and Nick about this, and we decided it'd be good to get the new councillors involved in this year. And then it's the rotation of the older councillors. So the hearing subcommittee that is to be appointed at this stage is Brown, Woodhead, Noon, Deeker, Kempton, Hope and Laws, 7 total. So without further ado, I'd like to move those recommendations before we have the discussion. Is there a second for that?
Happy to see that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Woodhead. Okay, it's open for discussion, this paper, quite a comprehensive paper.
Okay, can I start? I've got three issues that I think are missing from this draft annual plan before I can vote for it, and which haven't been properly covered. I find it... We discussed during workshops the idea of Lake Recife, and our attempt to try and do something about it, to the point that the chairman was seeking to involve the government. But that will be a long-term process, and nothing is going to be happening in this financial year from the government, and there is no guarantee of action at all. There is nothing in our draft annual plan that contributes towards the control of Lake Recife and Lake Dunstan and surrounding waterways. And it is a grievous omission that I think mitigates against our pronounced view that we are responsible for and going to take remedial action where we find issues related to the southern alpine lakes and surrounding waterways. And so I would like to move an amendment that we place a nominal sum of $100,000 towards the mitigation against of Lake Recife in our lakes and waterways in this draft annual plan. That's the first thing.
The second thing is that there is a sum of money that's going to be spent in this draft annual plan, $665,000, towards furthering design of the head office replacement. Designs, costings and consultation. And that this is in the draft annual plan. I would vote that this be removed from the draft annual plan for 17-18 because it's putting the cart before the horse. We have to go to special consultation under the Act, under the Local Government Act, for such a huge sum of money, which is indeterminate at this time of money, at the point in time. And we should be doing that before we do spend any further on the $660,000. And the third issue I want to raise relates to the discussion that we didn't have. No, I want to ask a question, and that is around the dividend of Porto Botargo, which I've just flagged. I think their dividend return is pathetic in comparison with their asset base. It is severely and significantly, in comparison with other ports in New Zealand, under-resourcing our council, and we are asking for an additional $1.5 million, is that right, Stephen? For this year, draft annual plan, and I believe that that level should be boosted to $2.5 million as a dividend, rather than $1.5 million. And with the idea that it become more permanent. The dividend from Porto Botargo, as I said, in comparison to their asset base, is poor. So with those three additions to the draft annual plan, I'd be delighted if we could address those in turn. Fourthly, and just a minor point, without discussing it with me, you've put me on the hearings committee. I don't know what that entails or anything about it, so prior to accepting that particular appointment, if you could let me know. Thank you.
Okay, so you're moving three motions there.
Well, I'd like to contribute $100,000 that would be added to the draft annual plan for 17-18 for the mitigation and management of Lagra siphon in the lakes and waterways of the Otago Regional Council. There is nothing here at all, not $1, and the Regional Council has contributed nothing.
Okay, is that the only one?
No, well, that's the first one.
Yep. Okay, we'll deal with that first. Council Laws has moved that we place an additional $100,000 in the budget for the control of Lagra siphon. I just take issues with the fact we do nothing. We do work in that area. And you said...
What do we do?
Oh, well, I thought we...
Mr McLean might want to answer. I've just asked the question, and we're spending around $70,000 on Lake Dunstan and about $30,000 on Kawarra, and majority of it's around surveillance and monitoring, but also controlling the weed in the Kawarra, and working with, I mean, this is a multi-stakeholder project led by LINZ.
Yes.
So, I object to just chucking some money in without going through a decent process and working with the fellow stakeholders. So, and understanding the program, which has been put in place for years to step away through, underpinned from a policy perspective by our pest strategy. So, it's not up to us just to off the cuff chuck some cash in. We're part of a group that is working on this issue over time. There was a report in today's regulatory committee, I think it was, over the work that's going on in the Kawarra, for example, and a plan that MPI LINZ have put in place, and again we are part of to ensure it doesn't establish in Lake Wakatipu. So staff might be able to better inform us about actually what part we are currently playing.
Okay, just before we move on any further, is there a seconder for this additional recommendation, further recommendations? Well, if not, that lapses. Okay. Your next one, Councillor Laws.
All right, that the sum of $665,000 is removed from the draft annual plan for 17-18 related to the further development of the
head office building, Otago Regional Council head office replacement building.
Just before we, well, I'll ask for a seconder first. Before we do that, I'll just ask, maybe ask the CEO just to clarify with us what that money's for, so everyone's quite clear.
So, thank you. Through you, Mr. Chairman, the Council approved ongoing investigation, which we are currently doing, and we'll report in detail at the Council meeting in 2 weeks' time. So that is the appointment of an architect and the establishment of the high-level plans, formal national plans for the site, consideration of the car parking, which was a requirement of the heads of agreement with the DCC, who are the landowner on the one site, which is the Dowling Street site. So the additional work that needs to be done to complete the requirement that has gone through the council is included in this year's annual plan. So we are just continuing the work that has already begun to come back the recommendation and essentially a price for what a new head office will cost. Noting to the new councillors that green site, brown site and refurbishment of this site has already been considered. We will review that for those new councillors at the next council meeting, but we are through a major part of the discussion to the point that we're putting this money in for the ongoing work as directed.
Thank you for that. Now I'll ask for a seconder for Councillor Orr's recommendation. The seconder, please. If not, that lapses. Your third recommendation, Councillor Laws?
Port Otago's dividend be increased from $7.5 million to $10 million.
Okay, I'll ask for a seconder straight up for that.
Okay.
No seconder? Okay, that lapses as well.
Thank you.
Further discussion on this paper?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Look, I firstly want to say thank you to the staff. There's been a lot of work go into this, and over the last 2 years, Mr. Bodeka has tweaked the way the annual plan's been constructed internally inside the organisation. And we're also aware of, from an outcome end at the other end of the perspective, that the reporting's changed too. There's quite a shift here occurring, and we certainly have listened to the needs and requests from the community, weighed them up. The conversation earlier today in the technical committee around Lake Snow, for example, and incorporating in, once we understand the work that needs done in that example, incorporating it into our annual plan. There's a whole range of activities here that we're picking up, expanding or reacting to. In particular, and it's taken us a while to shape it up and get our heads around it, but the implementation phase of Plan Change 6A, see where we are proposing to do some assessments, farm by farm by farm. Some of them will be desktop, but it's going to do two things. It's going to help the organisation understand the risks with respect to implementation of 6A, but also good engagement with individual landholders and help them with the thinking and planning and the delivering some outcomes on their farms with respect to the implementation of 6A. And it's taken us a while. It's going to cost a bit of money, and we're going to need some extra staff, but I think it's a good move and pleased to see it there. There's a whole range of other activities. I'm sure there'll be other councillors want to pick up some of them. Wallaby control, again, we touched on that earlier today. The potential for, and we're asking for feedback on this one, for the setting up of a new office, but certainly an expanded facility with more resources in Queenstown. And the other one that I'd like to highlight is the funding of emergency management. And so there's a question there going to the community whether it should be a standard fee per property or there's a mix of capital value and there's two options we're asking. So looking for the feedback there. The other one that I'm sure Councillor Kempton will have some comments on is the investment in your light. In the Waikatipu public transport. And we forget that actually we pulled forward the review of the passenger transport plan in the Waikatipu by year. And there's been some very tight time frames staff have had to work to, and we've been working with QLDC and NZTA and the airport up there, and have got quite a stunning proposal in my view. And it's a significant increase in the cost, particularly around the targeted rate for residents, but we understand the issues up there, and we're being innovative and driving forward with some proposed outcomes. So I look forward to hearing from the community, subject to us moving the recommendations. The other point I'd like to note, Mr. Chairman, is that we have a comprehensive number of meetings around the region wanting to interact with the community. I hope they turn up and come and listen to the presentation and express their views. But we're not this year, because of the number of those meetings, not going to individually visit every district or city council, but we will be welcoming the politicians and the mayors to our public meetings. I'll leave it there. I think this is a good annual plan, and let's get it out there and hear what the public think.
Yeah, I'd just like to reiterate the fact that it probably is a transitional annual plan. I think for a long time we sort of had status quo, and there were minimal changes each year, but there are significant changes this year, as Stephen has outlined, and I think it's good. We live in a very dynamic world. Councillor Kempton.
Yes, we do, and that was my starting point. Thank you. In fact, my thunder's being stolen all over the place, but that's okay. We started this process last year, in fact, of sitting up and smelling the roses and whatever else there was out there to smell. It is a time when there isn't an area that we're involved in that isn't undergoing enormous amount of change, in some cases exponential change. And to some degree, the things that we look after are under siege from new things, and so we've got to respond to that. There are more issues, and some of those because of changes in climate and changes in the environment. People are becoming much, much more aware and potentially less tolerant of risk. They've got rising expectations on the ORC to counter those risks. We need to support economic development, much of which, of course, is around Queenstown and Central Otago, and the point about some groundbreaking work in public transport in that area is really, really important. But I think the most important thing that I am really happy about with this plan is that we're honest in plotting the likelihood of more of the same over the next two or three years. Yes, we've been able to work with Port Otago to cushion that through, but this is the name of the game for the foreseeable, and that is we've simply got to respond to a range of exponentially changing environment. And so the next LTP, of course, will be a real challenge. But I think we're rising to the challenge. And I say this is this, I would have been disappointed had we returned to our more parsimonious ways after actually having broken through a bit of a barrier last year. I'm really pleased with this plan.
Thank you. Councillor Deegan.
Yeah, I just want to add, pardon me, one thing to what Councillor Kempton has just said, for which I congratulate him, because every word I agree with, and your introduction too. But the one thing that hasn't been said is congratulations to the CE, because I believe Peter has led us into this cycle of plans. And he's explained to us why we need to spend more money on certain things. We're responding to legislative change, to community change, to community requests, particularly in our rural areas. And we have traditionally not been good at detecting what is needed there. It'll be interesting to see if the hearings committee is submitted to by a lot of people, say on Lagrosiphon, It could well happen, and it may make us think again. I happened to meet Mayor Jim Bolton, Christchurch Airport, on Monday, and he'd just seen the media release about our annual plan, and he was fizzing. He was really excited by it, and the next day in the paper, there he was, saying, "This is terrific. The Regional Council is talking to us, delivering on what we have talked about." So that was a wonderful thing to hear. So particularly though, I wanted, Mr. Chairman, to congratulate through you the CE and of course Nick and Sharon and the team for having led us into an excellent annual plan, an excellent consultation document from Caroline and Eleanor and their colleagues. I'm very impressed.
As Chairman, I'd certainly like to echo those words. It's been a relatively smooth process, so thank you very much, staff, for all your work. Councillor Scott?
Yeah, look, I won't repeat what people have said, but I just like the fact that we're fronting up to some difficult issues, rural water quality, 6A minimum flows, this type of thing. We know, I mean, that we're budgeting to, you know, we're endeavouring to, and now we've got to actually deliver. And I know in terms of our previous debate, in terms of 1D, you know, there's still some significant challenges ahead and we need to keep going. And another challenge is the traffic situation in the Waka Tipu, and we're trying to address that through our bus strategy. So there's some good things going on and we need to keep it up. I've got a question. It's, if I can find it, it's in relation to the Castalia, because, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the first time through the chair, Mr. Donnelly, that we've actually seen that report, because we've referred to it a few times, but I think it's the first time I've actually read it.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Whereas, in fact, we've been referring to it through this process probably for a lot of this year, you know, Castalia. Whereas, in fact, this is the first time I've actually had an opportunity to read it. And I can understand, you know, the 10%, 90% in relation to the general regional rate as opposed to the targeted rate. My question is that the Castalia report also highlights that the Otago and Canterbury benefits are 24% to 76%, whereas the rates, as far as I can tell, are 27% to 33%. So, you know, I'm not sure where else to talk about this Castalia thing. I assume it is here and now, but maybe it should have been a separate report. I'm not sure. So where are we with that? Are the Otago ratepayers paying all of their due?
Through the chair, I think the 27 to 33 is the other. It's actually 20. You're comparing 27% currently to 24%. So the
Yeah,
because the Meridian side sits in the Canterbury, in the Canterbury area. So there, and the main reason why there's a difference is Castalia is actually, so the difference between them saying it should be 24 versus the current 27 is that they've done their assessment based on land value, whereas the current split agreement is based on CV.
Okay, so I suspect the question is, are we okay? Are our rates reflective of their benefit ratio?
Well, we believe that they are, because we actually charge the rate rate on CV. Castalia, in their review, they've taken the view that the land value is the better way to assess the split, and that's not how we charge our rate, and that's not how we have the agreement with ECAN. So it is something that we'll discuss with ECAN, but the difference there of 3%.
Is it only 3%? I may have misinterpreted.
Yeah, it is, because it's not, because of the fact that, yeah, you're comparing the 24% to the 27%, the 76 includes Meridian, as that sits in the ECAN side of when you do your valuations. So, yeah. So the current agreement is based on CV.
Yeah.
And we'd have to talk to ECAN about that. The difference there of 3% on like our share is 150,000. It's not a big amount.
Okay. what I've sort of found is there's been a lot of these supplementary reports sort of in the background, and they've taken a little reading and so forth. And sometimes, you know, if they become a report in their own right, so that we can actually debate it, critique it, and understand it. Because we've been talking about this lower Waitaki thing for long enough. And, yeah, thank you.
Thank you for raising that, because I've just learned something myself. Even though I've been going to the meetings for years. Councillor Noon.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. My comment will be around this is sort of where the rubber hits the road with our community. The projected rate increase sitting around about that 14% over the next 3 years, you know, will they accept that, you know, they're happy to put their hand in their pocket and get better outcomes for the community? That's certainly the impression that we've all been getting during the last year's election, and feedback since then as well. So look forward to the public process, and thank you for suggesting I'm on the hearings panel. Nothing like direct contact with your ratepayers. With regards to Councillor Moore's earlier failed motion about an increased dividend from Port Otago, I'm not against that suggestion, but I believe that the appropriate way to have that dialogue would be through a letter of expectation. And so I'm just flagging that, and I have mentioned this previously at the workshop for the plan, is that I think we need to collectively form a view around that. And I just don't think now is the time. That's why I didn't support the motion, but I'm not against the idea. I think we should have the conversation, and I think it should be through a letter of expectation.
I think through our workshops we flagged the idea that in the LDP next year we're going to have a look at the ownership of our ownership of Port Otago and whether that is appropriate in the future. I think that's right, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, and we do have a review of the state of the corporate intent coming up in the coming months, Mr. Donnelly.
Yeah, so July.
July. Yeah. Yep. So there's processes.
That's when that motion could be entertained, are you saying to me, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, well, I say next year we've flagged, we're possibly, it hasn't been decided definitely, but we've flagged it that next year we'll have a look at it.
Thank you.
Any other comment? Councillor Hope.
I think this reads really well. I think it's great to see, and I think the important thing that you two raised about this being a very dynamic world, and that the information so quick, isn't it? And from years ago, you can have a look as a ratepayer, you can sit there and you can just get all this information quickly. So I think it's very well done and great to see. Thank you.
Okay. Any further comment? If not, sorry, Councillor Rawls.
I'd just like to say that I will support this draft annual plan. I thought about it. It's important that we have consultation on this issue, and even though I don't agree with all aspects, I think it's important to consult on it, and I don't want to. But I just wanted to flag that, you know, these issues are not going to go away. I don't want to go on the hearings committee, please, because I'm not 100%. So I don't want to be in a position where I'm advocating a dissenting position.
Well, you're not really advocating. You're there to basically the process as we go out and talk.
I know, but I'd be questioning, and Sam Neill could do a much better job than me.
I only need six, so I'm good to the others.
Well, if you're not definitely not going to be on the hearings panel, we'd put Councillor Bell on to take your place. So, is that definitely where you stand?
I'm sorry, it would be. Infradig of me to go on.
Okay, we'll make that adjustment. Is that right for you, Councillor Bell?
Oh, so can we just can you repeat those names then you had earlier? You had Noon.
So we've got Brown, Woodhead, Noon, Deeker, Kempton, Hope, and Bell.
Right. Thank you.
Okay, we have the recommendation. If there's no further comment, it's been moved and seconded. I'll put it to the meeting. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. The next paper is about the leaf flood protection scheme, basically giving us an update of where we're at. Obviously, we're going through a process of doing upgrading sections off the leaf in terms of flood control. And I think we're on to the fifth section now with Dr. Palmer. Yeah. So, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll take this as read. Basically, it's advising the committee that you've awarded the contract to Down New Zealand Limited for the ITS stage of the lease, and those works are now underway.
I'm happy to move the two recommendations.
Second. Seconded, Councillor Deacon. Any comment on that? Councillor Scott.
I mean, just to acknowledge, you know, to Dr. Palmer and his team, that I think what he's saying is that through, you know, the value processes and modelling and so forth, that they managed to get a scope that ultimately had a price that was significantly less than the original budget, and I think that's good.
Yeah.
And certainly to this point, there's been a lot of kudos in terms of the work and the project that's been implemented. So, thank you.
Any other comment? If not, I'll put the recommendation. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carry. Director's report. March. Mr. Donnelly, anything you wish to highlight there?
The comment there about the irrigation schemes, I can take it as read, but this is something that's been ongoing since July 2015, so it's now been resolved with QV and the valuations. So as we've said there, we will be issuing some credits to those companies, irrigation companies, as we've said, who had overpaid their rates at the old valuations.
Thank you. Councillor Woodyer.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're going to immediately pay that back rather than a credit against rates coming?
Yes, we do. Legally, we have to refund it.
Good.
We can't just credit it.
Thank you.
Yep.
It's not going to break the budget.
No.
Any other comment?
Happy to move the recommendations, Mr. Chairman.
Councillor Woodyer.
And there's two of them there.
Councillor Noon.
Mr. Chairman, just before you gallop on, can I ask a question from note 7 on page 94? Or am I believing? No, I'm not. It's all one paper.
You want
to
hear that.
I know the CE has delegation to distribute the Environmental Enhancement Reserve, but I'd be curious to know what those three grants were and to whom and for what purpose.
Is this on the next paper?
Sorry.
We'll just pass the recommendation for the director's report. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried.
Yep.
Financial report to 31 January. Sorry, Michael, Councillor Deacon.
Okay, I thought that was all the one. Oh, no, I'm sorry, I've been stupid. Yeah. Anyway, Peter, what are you...
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to report fully on all of the grants since the last time I reported at the CE's report in a fortnight, so
cool.
There'll be more detail there.
Thank you.
Yeah, this issue was raised in the Audit and Risk Committee, so I definitely look forward to that. Mr. Boeke, any other comment on the financial report to in January? Thank you. Seconded by Councillor Hope. No further comments. If not, I put it. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried.
Agenda.
I think we're in committee, is that right?
Yes.
I move we go into committee for the reasons outlined. Seconded by Councillor Noon. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Now, I just note that